environment or other forms of ecological concern. And this forum came out of an idea that we do a lot of very cerebral things at Holden Village. We talk a lot about theories and about global issues, but we don't really do a lot with very concrete things, like what can I do at home? What can I take home from Holden? Or what can I learn from the people here that I can put in practice in my life that will help me live more ecologically conscious? So that's what this session forum is supposed to do. Don't expect me to teach, because that's not my job. Basically, what I want to do is just mediate a discussion where we share with each other what we're doing. And we've got a few people here, Al included, who have some ideas for what we can be doing even more, and some of the roots behind some things that we can do. So last time we had this session, what I did was I went around and I listed on the board places where we live outside of Holden, and places where, not geographical locations, but places like the home, the workplace, the community, our shopping, our church communities, and places like that where we can make some concrete choices and some actual, actually do something that will perhaps help strengthen our relationship with the environment. So with that, do you have a agenda for wanting to talk about these, or are these just
No, they're just questions.
Okay.
Just things to ask oneself.
Okay.
How you can do those things.
And there, this is from the
State of the World.
State of the World.
Last chapter.
Okay.
It's really characterizing the environmental revolution. And these are the things you ask, because these are the things that are involved in the environmental revolution. These are the dimensions of it.
So, why don't we start? Last time the discussion started about cloth diapers. And we ended up at the end of the discussion talking about the pace that our culture and our society takes that doesn't allow us to slow down and live more gently, as the title of the session was put forth today. So the discussion can go anywhere and start anywhere, but I hope that we do have some concrete things that we can share or think about. I guess I'll start the way I started last time. I didn't bring my backpack and my plastic cup with me this time, but I'm a student. In my daily life, I carry a lot of things. I'm walking places. And I go to the store and I buy for just me. So I carry a backpack. I carry a day pack about so big. And instead of getting paper or plastic grocery sacks, instead of using paper or styrofoam cups, I have my, 16-ounce plastic cup. I use my backpack. I use a handkerchief instead of Kleenex. There's so many small things like that that we can share that might just turn on a light bulb for somebody. There's a lot of technical information, too, about the statistics and the technology that's happening nowadays. And if anyone has any of that to share, that'd be real helpful, too.
At my food store near Philadelphia, we are encouraged to bring our own paper bags. And the store counts the number of bags that we bring and then gives us a refund. And we use those bags to take our food home. And then we can bring those bags back and recycle them that way. That's a small thing, but it helps.
Sure does. Yeah.
We have a similar situation in Albuquerque at a co-op. If you bring your mesh bag, which I do, then they give you, it's either 5 or 10 cents off on your bill. So they encourage you to do that.
So there's a financial incentive.
The grocery store I shop at does the same thing. If you return either your plastic bag or the paper bag that you used previously, you'll get a 5-cent refund. Or if you bring your own cloth bag, it'll give you 5 cents as well. And then another thing, if I'm going to go out of a meeting, I always take my own mug because the chances of having foam or paper cups are going to be very possible, so I have that available if there's nothing that can disturb humans.
At work, when we have staff parties and stuff like this, we all have our own plate so that we don't keep buying paper plates and plastic plates, so we just kind of clean them up and save them for the next month, because we have a little get-together once a month usually, and we all have our own little plate, and that helps a lot.
Yeah.
A little.
I think a lot of churches a few years ago stopped buying styrofoam and started buying paper, but there's a problem there too, in that the huge amount of paper waste that's created. Also, sometimes those paper cups are waxed and they can't be recycled, and they have a hard time decomposing as well. A lot of churches are using ceramic. We at Holden use ceramic cups that are washed. It's pretty hydro-intensive, it uses a lot of water, but those are considerations you have to weigh, I think. So with our paper bags and our mesh bags and our reuse of bags and things, we have increased the tree cover a little bit by slowing the deforestation. Other ideas, things that you do at home, things that we do at home that perhaps we can integrate.
I'm curious, maybe those of you who know more about this than I do would have a better opinion, but I'm guessing that the population growth is the most significant issue, and therefore population control can have the most long-term impact on human impact on the Earth, short of getting rid of nuclear war and some things like that. And as I think about that, it occurs to me all the issues and kind of ways that we suggest to our children and to our grandchildren how many kids they should have, or how we made those choices ourselves. And I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I know I talk to her about when you have kids, plural, this is, you know, I want to be involved in, you know, I'd really like to help raise my grandchildren, and I wonder, am I already giving her a mindset that she should have more than one child, or any children? I kind of, even as a young parent, you know, I consider myself, am giving her a mindset or an expectation as to how she will fulfill my desires in terms of her offspring. I think, you know, gee, am I doing that right? You know, maybe I should be talking to her about not having children or only having one.
People of the South, so-called, new name for third world people, say that we ought to stop having kids instead of our talking to them about having kids, because every one of our kids uses about 20 times or at least 20 times as much resources. And we give off 5 pounds of, 5 tons, I mean, of 5 tons of carbon dioxide per person. And they give off, you know, maybe 6/10 of a ton. 5/10 of the time. So they say to us, you stop having children, because you are the ones who are ruining the environment. That's what they say. Your point is well taken, I think.
And yet on the same issue, I look back at my own family. I have 3 sisters, and I would hate to think of my own children. I don't have any yet, but I'd like to think of having more than one, having the love and care of more than just the mother and father. Having a family, I think that's one of the greatest gifts that God's given us. And I also see, you mentioned that, what can we do at home that we model at Holden? You know, this morning I was working on the lawns. It was my first morning on staff, but it just really impressed me that this is really like a commune. Everyone has their job to do, and you do it. And some of the larger families, when they used to have a lot larger families, that's everyone had their job. And I think it took away from maybe some of the stress in life that just one person or a few people have to do all of these different things. You mentioned diapering and how society can't, will not let us have a less stressful life, and that we have to use disposable diapers just so that we can do all of these other things. And yet, I think with a larger family, maybe you could split some of those things up. Now, I don't know what that does with population control, but I do think that that's one of the greatest gifts of God, is a family.
Sounds kind of to me as though you almost answered your own question. With a change of a community lifestyle, you broaden your family of blood into a family of choice, and in living communally, those relationships that you had with your sisters, your children can have with other children in the context of a community. That the idea of living in small intentional communities towards a more sustainable economy has been widely talked about.
Well, my wife and I have one child, and we'd be glad to talk about that, but I don't know that anybody would like to talk about having only one. And it's, I personally can't imagine having more. Great. But the other issue that I think really impacts the Americans is the automobile, mm-hmm. and the heavy use of the automobile and how it has really impacted our environment and our culture. And I don't know if it's realistic elsewhere, but I'm seeing more and more use of mass transportation in our community in Western Washington, where the buses, although they are still subsidized, are extending their routes and becoming more available than they were 10 years ago. And I use a bus about half the time now, and I didn't 3 years ago. And it isn't more convenient, except for parking. and that kind of gets to be a time stress issue. You get so hassled about trying to find a parking space that you'd rather take the bus. And so the cost of the inconvenience is worth it. And I don't know if that's possible elsewhere in the United States, that the bus mass transportation systems are expanding. I know when we were in Europe last year, just amazed at how easy it was to use mass transportation in Holland and in Austria and in England, that there wasn't a need for an automobile. But in this country, at this point in my life, it's awfully tempting to, and it's the norm.
Oh yeah.
Every adult has an automobile.
I was going to say, I think population growth probably is a problem, but the last time I read the statistics of the United States population growth, it was very stable. I think the United States and the people and the waste that we generate and the way we use cars and the way we buy clothes and the way we buy food and throw it away and what we buy for our kids, I mean, all the Nintendos, these games, and I mean, we've got room pools of toys that could, if given to other people, with, I don't know, 15, 20 families could use them, and one kid has it, and we haven't, we don't understand it. We have to stop doing that kind of stuff. They don't need 15 pairs of shoes, and you know, all these nice little clothes, and a new outfit every time you get a new holiday, or every month, or, I mean, you just need to start using what we have. But we're so wasteful is what I see,
yeah.
That we just waste more than any other population in the whole world, I think, more, twice, 10 times as much.
Predictions are by 2025 will increase by 50 million. Now, I don't know how much of that increase is going to be in migration, you know, but that's what our population is supposed to be. And of course, everybody who comes here begins to adopt our lifestyle, so it's tantamount to the same thing. If we let people in, they're going to use the resources at the same rate, more or less.
Kind of along what she was saying, is anybody familiar with what's called the Taiwan Gazette? Well, this is a publication by a woman in Maine, and about 3 or 4 years ago,
this family was on the cover of Parade magazine, or it's the Sunday magazine that comes out with the newspaper, and how they had saved all this money to buy a house out in the country. And she basically did it by being very resourceful with the things that she had, which is exactly what you're talking about. And kind of, I don't know, my mom grew up in the Depression, and she's just very resourceful with all these little things. She saves things, you know, when she takes a hem out, she saves a thread. And this, it's called the Tightwad Gazette, and I can get a address if you guys want it. But it tells how to be resourceful. A lot of us, like me, I've grown up watching my mom, but a lot of it is lost, you know, and it tells exactly how you can really conserve energy, and also just by reusing things, and reusing, you know, vacuum cleaner bags, things like that. So if you're interested, you can see me and I'll try and get that address for you.
There's a bulletin board, Care for the Creation bulletin board, on the west end. Or the east end of the dining hall. If you could just put it on a piece of paper and hang it up there.
Okay, that's a good idea. I'll probably have to send it in because I don't have it with me.
You send it to me.
But it's a monthly publication, and it comes out with all these ideas on how to be real resourceful. And consequently, you end up saving a lot of money, too, if you can do this.
Well, I flew to Rio, but I insisted that my wife take the train. I said, I can't come to Oldham if you don't take the train. I didn't know any other way to get to Rio. But my figures are that it's about tantamount to driving one person in a car to take an airplane, right, in terms of the amount of gasoline per mile that you use. So that it's a little more inconvenient, but she and my son took the train, and we'll take the train home. The amount of gasoline you save on something like that is unbelievable. And the amount of carbon that you save, if you're interested in cutting down the carbon, which I am. And I've said here in my Ten Commandments that we should, I will cut my energy use 20% in the next 12 months. Now, there are all kinds of ways of cutting your energy use. Driving is one real way of cutting it. There are all kinds of ways in a home to cut the energy use, in terms of hot water, and where you set the thermostat, and whether or not you have air conditioning, whether or not you have an efficient refrigerator, whether you get your car tuned up, and all kinds of little things that save. I don't know whether I'm going to make 20%, but that's, I think one has to set a kind of a goal. And if you think energy, you know, again, I see no reason why we went to a war in the Arab Gulf, except for Israel. There's no reason in the world why we needed that oil, why we needed the oil. We may have wanted to protect it for other people who really need it more than we do. But if we had energy efficiency the way some people were recommending, and I recommended in the 70s, just no question, we wouldn't need to import one barrel of oil today. And I've said in my sermons frequently that if you can afford to buy a car that gets 50 miles per gallon, you don't do it. It's a sin. Now, I can't get my wife to buy a Civic Honda.
Simple, yeah.
So I'm in sin. That's, I'm really separated from the creation, I think. That's what sin is, it's separation. And I don't know whether I'm going to win or not. But we can clearly afford it. Not a question of money. It's just a question of her sense of the safety. And my son is getting so big that she thinks the car will be too small for him. I took a 6.7 and a 6.5 to around Europe in a little Peugeot, so I the littleness of the car doesn't really influence my, but it's very ambiguous when you go about doing stuff, trying to do some of these things, because you're not alone in doing them.
We can go ahead and buy a car. I mean, that's good for the economy. Just don't use it. which when you have Well, we have two jobs in our family, and one is kind of a long, but we always commute in our Geo Metro, the two of us. So that's what, 80 miles to the gallon or something like that, equivalent. But before my wife got the job that's 40 miles away, 20 miles away, took a bus every day. And I didn't find it inconvenient because I added 2 hours of my life that I could read.
Yeah.
I like to read, like I do,
oh, yeah.
Or like catch that snooze on the way home. People always, you know, refreshed for the evening. And
oh, Geo Metro is the best mileage you can get now.
And you put two people in it, and then you just double it, people per mile. But the idea of a bus as an inconvenience always struck me as funny.
Yeah, well, it is an inconvenience if you live in Chicago and you drive.
Well, we live in Portland, Oregon, and that might make a difference, you know, other people. But that gets into action with your transit agency or something like that, mm-hmm. if it's that inconvenient.
And I think convenience and inconvenience are constructs of the mind.
Right, right. You see, I constructed, but to me, mm-hmm. you know, taking the 5 minute walk to the bus stop and getting my 30 minutes worth of reading in the morning mm-hmm. is a value to me. Because I don't get much time the rest of the day to do that, and I certainly can't do it when I'm driving. You can't. Some people can do both.
Yeah.
The same is true on my bicycle.
You can't read and ride your bicycle.
I can't read while I'm riding my bicycle, but you know, all the money that people pay for health clubs.
I know, isn't that junk?
You know, heated and taken care of and kept up and just incredibly energy inefficient. You know, just to make all those chrome Nautilus things for people to lift when you come to Holden Village and you can just lift suitcases off the boat and have the same sort of exercise. But riding your bike is a wonderful exercise. It's inconvenient if you're thinking about time or carrying large loads, but it's extremely healthy. It's one of the only exercises along with swimming that doesn't tax the joints, the knees, the way that running sometimes does.
But even for your health clubs, I fantasize about harnessing the energy, putting it back into generators and powering part of the lights in the health club. You know, that's kind of dumb.
Oh, yeah, that would be.
But when you think about it, people go there to literally generate energy,
mm-hmm.
calories.
And just send them into the
person running at full speed. Is, you know,
I think we ought to give up buying, mostly, except for food and necessities. It's very hard to give up buying. A couple of years ago, we were here for 21 months, I painted my wife a couple of pictures. And I wasn't going to spend any money for her. You know, I wasn't going to spend any money, that's clear. So I had the paint and I had the canvas, so I painted her a couple of pictures. I said, boy, I've done. My son gave her a walk, a big long walk up to Holden Lake, which he doesn't do with the family ever. So, you know, this was a creative thing to do. We got a lot. I painted again. And so the idea was helpful. Then we got home, and she wanted to put them up in the living room, bless her heart. And so she set them out to be framed at 53 hours. It didn't use much wood. But my idea of not spending any money, I mean, it isn't the spending of the money, qua money. It's kind of the idea that you're buying your way into happiness and satisfaction.
No, that.
Boy.
That kind of goes against what George Bush's philosophy is of spurring on the economy now. However, you know how they're cutting interest rates, trying to get people to buy. But the people that I've spoken with, and I don't know if they're experts, but one was a banker, he said that that's not doing it. People don't have the money to buy. I mean, interest rates may be lower, but except for home buying.
Oh, it's absolutely. I say if people followed my advice, we'd have a major depression. But I think you have to weigh long-term value against short-term, and it's very ambiguous. You know, it's so ambiguous.
Well, there is an alternative that will help the economy, and that's you buy things that have low impact, like human services usually have low impact on the environment, other than buying material things. And yet the economy is...
You buy fluorescent bulbs and you spend enough money. I tried to fill our house with fluorescent bulbs. You know, we had a rheostat on one, and they don't work on that.
That's right.
And I put them in there. My wife was frantic. So I had to take them out of there. And then some of them kind of flickered when they go on, and that bugged her. So I had to get some others, which were more expensive. But, you know, they say they last 10 years.
You see, you really focused on something that preserved the environment, and you spent money doing it. So obviously, the money, all the money you spend goes to a person.
It fuels the economy, but it fuels it in what I think is a constructive, creative way. Because they say if we use the renewable resources, we'd have lots more people working to produce the renewable source, wind power.
A lot longer term.
Coal-fired power stations take the least man hours, woman hours, person hours.
But we want cheap electricity at the same time.
Right.
That's, I think, one of the biggest problems, a major problem, the desire
to use electricity. We don't have to use all electricity. We could cut our electric use by 40% by energy efficient. Energy efficient refrigerators, energy efficient. California set a rule back when Jerry Brown was the governor, and California uses about half as much electricity per person as Texas does. They set regulations for appliances and regulations for homes. New homes had to meet certain regulations in terms of insulation.
The conversation has been dominated by a few people, and I don't want that to happen. Please jump in. I don't want to shut you off.
That's all right.
I want to shut you off.
I'd love to hear what some more ideas.
To go back down, go ahead.
I was wondering what to do with things like VCRs or stereos, TVs, things that break down. They cost more to repair than buying a new one. So, what would you suggest in that case?
Boy, don't have one.
It's better for the economy to fix it.
It's better for the economy
and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
To fix it yourself, or
to have it fixed.
I suppose, because
you pay a service person. That's going to, and he or she applies work to it, which is human work, and maybe you change a part or whatever, but you don't replace all the materials that went into the VCR.
And it wouldn't go into a landfill either if you just threw it away.
Excuse me?
It wouldn't go into a landfill either if you
didn't. If you fixed it, it would not go into a landfill. There are some places where you can recycle electronic equipment.
I would like to hear some ideas about what can be done politically at the city level and at the state level. Where do you go from individual action to political action? What kinds of things would one encourage a legislator to do?
Well,
you'd insist that the state and the city and the nation set goals for using recycled paper, for example, that they use on an accelerated rate, begin with 25% and increase it 5 or 10% a year until it got up to 75% of recycled paper. So you would create the market for the recycling so that the recycled materials are demanded. There's lots of recycled material now in storage because there isn't demand. So that's one thing we could do. And of course you could buy recycled stuff. I bought some recycled computer paper in San Diego and shipped it up here. It cost me a mint to ship it up here. But it was a little ambiguous because I couldn't carry it with all the rest of the junk. At any rate, that's one thing you could do, and you can work with your congressperson. I've suggested if you have a task force in your church, you meet with your congressperson and talk to them about these kinds of things, really. Now, there are a lot of other things that can be done in terms of setting regulations and So they, the government could insist that all of the fleets of their cars get a certain mileage per gallon in their cars. They're not going to buy cars. Los Angeles is to... cars by 98 have to have no emissions. Now, I don't, they've done that. I don't think no emissions unless the electricity is produced by solar will solve the problem of global warming. I mean, it won't take away carbon emissions, but it will at least get rid of the smog and the health effects of the smog in Los Angeles.
Another thing to bring up here is the fact that the military is the largest industry in this country. And they have very, very few environmental regulations on them because it's national security. I know that there's no emissions on any of the military's vehicles, thousands and thousands and thousands of vehicles, including airplanes, helicopters, trucks, jeeps, tanks. No emissions regulations. And as far as I know, they don't use recycled products. They're a big, big, big consumer and a big, big, big waste producer. So, you know, it begs the question, is our military at its enormous bureaucracy and capacity really necessary in our country right now?
The question was, though, Mark, what can you personally do about it?
Write to people about cutting defense budget.
You know, I think the best thing to do is work for Gore for president in 96. Mm-hmm. If you really want some movement, he's got a global Marshall Plan, in my judgment, is the first statesperson-like thrust of our leadership in the last 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I wrote him to that effect, that I thought the best thing I could do in the next 4 years is work for him for president. Because clearly, in a democracy, you're not going to get much advance politically on these issues. With the corporate power and the general mindset of a democracy, they took a poll, only 10% of the public would accept a 25-cent a gallon tax on gasoline willingly, you know, with some joy. I mean, accept it as a need, and so only 10%. So I think we got to get leadership. We really have to get leadership in a democracy on these kinds of issues. They're long-term issues. Global warming doesn't affect you personally. It doesn't affect ozone depletion. Doesn't hit you very much. I don't know. I just had 8 or 9 couple of melanomas removed. So I'm more concerned probably, but generally speaking, these issues don't hit you. They're long-term issues, unless you live near toxic waste.
But they're going to affect our children and our grandchildren.
No question.
And that's what we're talking about,
not us. Well, that's going to move you to take the kind of drastic steps that are necessary and to move you to the kind of action that's necessary. See, I think that one thing I'm thinking about doing is organizing the kind of people's movement. And there are people all over the world that I've ran into in Rio that are interested in this, to negotiate with corporate America, like I did for Jesse Jackson on affirmative action, and to kind of threaten to withdraw their buying power from corporate America unless they have friendly, environmentally friendly policies. I don't think politically we're going to get very far, although it certainly would help to have somebody like Thor as the president. But I don't think we're going to get very far very fast politically in this country. I mean, I don't know why we're so far behind in terms of our leadership the rest of the world. I mean, the rest of the developed world. They're much more willing to take steps. In Netherlands, you have to use returnable bottles in Netherlands. It's required. Bodies, right? And
returnable bodies too.
Yeah. We are so slow in that, and our industry is so reluctant to move. So I I do think there's some steps we can take. I'll be outlining those in the next couple of days.
We've gotten very big. Where can we go now?
Very small, like door.
What, any other ideas, suggestions?
One very small question.
Okay.
When I go to the supermarket to buy detergent, which has the least impact on the environment? The what, detergent in the box or the detergent in the plastic bottle? I never know.
The detergent probably with the least amount of phosphates.
Well, the least amount of phosphates, yes, I checked for that. But is it better to buy the box to discard or the plastic bottle to discard?
Well, it's probably...
Or is it a toss-up?
I think it's better to buy the box.
The box.
Go ahead.
I think if it's a recyclable bottle, I think it's better to buy a bottle.
Okay.
And most of them, we recycle most pounds.
Most of the bottles are recyclable now, but where we live on Libby Island, unless you drive them to Coopville, they're not recycled. And then you drive your car 45 miles to take them to the recycling station.
You have just one place you can take them on the whole island then? Why is that?
I don't know. They will collect cans and...
Who's they?
The recycled station around the island will take glass and newspapers, tin cans and aluminum cans. But so far they don't have a facility for
plastic. Is that a government?
Yeah.
Is that a government agency?
I expect.
So you can vote them in or out, or?
No, you can't. No, it's a company.
It's a company. So they come in and do they have a franchise for the?
Yeah, they say it costs more to recycle than it.
Well, it may cost.
I'm not sure, but it's something to check. If that's an angle to check on.
I'm just thinking about things we can do. I mean,
yeah, it's something to check on to see how it.
Yeah.
It's Island Disposal, so I'm sure it's a private company.
Of course, the thing of the boxes, if they have a shiny clay paper over them, they won't accept it as corrugated.
No.
Well, you know, one thing, I've always thought about that. I'm surprised some of these great big huge warehouse stores like Costco hasn't come with, like, tanks of detergent that you could bring in your plastic jar back.
Container and refill it.
Yeah, and refill it, and it should be less expensive. I mean, I don't know what we could do. I guess just write the company and say, couldn't you bring in these, you know, 50-gallon drums or whatever of detergent?
Downy is doing that, so I don't see any reason why the detergent companies
couldn't
do as well. Oh yeah, you can buy the refills in the boxes and pour that into your Downy container and add water to it. So if they can do it, I don't know why at least the liquid detergent companies couldn't do it.
Now is that saving as far as when you still have the box to recycle, right?
Yeah.
So are we saving?
You're doing away with
one plastic container and more boxes. I don't know. No,
but it is a concentrate.
It's a concentrate,
so you.
So yeah, you've got
small,
a small.
Box.
Oh yeah,
small,
because it's
small,
a box. It's small. Like a pint.
Yeah, right.
I think when we talked about recycling and reusing, for me there's some lights that go off, and there's some ideas that happen too. The lights that go off are when we use our larger recycling agencies and things. There's a lot of cost in the fossil fuel used in the trucks to collect the things, and then in whatever process there is in washing and breaking down and recreating these things. The ideas that come up are ideas like saving your recyclable plastic bottles and things and using them yourself again. That way there's no real path it has to take away from you to come back again. So there's no fossil fuel cost. There's not a whole lot of other energy being expended except your own. You know, just saving your leftovers in like a
cool
margarine container. Cool.
Yeah, margarine or a cool container instead of buying Tupperware.
Yeah.
For example. Just very, very simple things like that we sometimes don't think about or think, well, I can just recycle it. There's still a cost in recycling. It's a great idea, but there's still a cost that's involved with it.
And I understand warehouses are bulging with recyclable materials that there's no market for at this point.
Go ahead.
I have a question about that. I mean, I understand that some in plastics, the virgin materials are cheaper for them to use than
the recycled material, and that's why they're using it?
The same as...
Because I still get tons, I see in the supermarket, tons of things that are still in plastic containers. So there's got to be a market for plastic. Mm-hmm. Are they still all using virgin materials?
Well, most plastic...
I mean, the cost of the container must be a penny difference or something like that to make it recycled.
Well, you can't, right now our health regulations are so that you can't put food in recycled plastic.
No, I'm talking about recycling. Oh, you mean actually re...
Like if you...
Reprocessed?
Reprocessed. You can't put any food in that.
Is that right?
Why is that?
Because they haven't found a way to totally sterilize it. Frustrating.
Really?
Yeah. So all of our food plastics have to go on and become plastic lumber or... plastic bags. So that's why there's that market for the new plastic for food. You can't put food in recycled plastic.
Yeah, but there's all these non-food products that aren't in recycled thing.
Well, they only recycle plastic 1 and 2 where I am now. The numbers on the bottom.
They take 2, 4, 6 from here.
Take 2, 4, 6.
Right, but not 1 and 5.
Well, you send yours to Al.
Well, at least get the ones taken.
That's right.
Well, it's a very little matter, but I don't believe in eating meat because I think it costs too much in all kinds of ways. It's you know, 6 or 8 pounds of grain, 4 pounds for turkey, 6 for beef, 8 for pork, 4 for turkey, 3 for chicken, and everything that goes into the grain in terms of the fertilizer, which pollutes the soil, and pesticides, which pollute the people who raise them, and which are on the food that you get. And it saves a little bit of carbon emissions. I say about a third of a ton a year you save per person, if you, which turns out to be quite a bit collectively. If, as I think we ought to reduce our carbon emissions about 80%, then the amount of saving would be considerably. It's about 85 million pounds a year. And I've got this article, of course, on why I think we should eat less meat. And it's a very small thing, but symbolically, I think it's very important to think of these things as symbolic acts, which call people's attention to the fact that you're concerned, as well as the actual.
I'd like to make a quick statement on symbolism and symbolic acts, and then I'll go to you. I think when we make symbolic acts, we start to change our mindsets, and we start to change the mindsets of those around us. And that's where we have to get. We have to change our minds. Al, remember the sermon you were writing when I was in Chicago visiting about repentance, repenting from sin, the sin of our separation from the natural world. To repent is not just to say you're sorry, but to recognize the depth of the separation and then change. And it's not just change some of your actions, but change your mind. Change your mindset and the way you go about your living. Be that in a change of diet, be that in changing your ideas that everything has to be so clean. We're a very clean conscious culture. I'll go back to that. Go ahead.
Well, my question is kind of regarding your eat less meat or no meat at all. I think that this, all of this intertwines with the economy. And all of these things have affect the people that produce them. So I would like to know what your answer is to the beef producers that we put out of business. And a lot of them are good, hardworking people. I'm from Iowa, and you know, the farms they're getting out of. What about, especially in Washington, we see where they cut the wood.
Loggers.
Thank you. Loggers. Now these towns you go through, and the towns are just dying. There's nothing for these people to do because that's all they've done. So I'd just like to know what your answer is, or...
Yeah, the system is taking more of jobs to Mexico and to around the world than possibly would be put out of work by this. Actually, you'd create work. You got to eat something. Somebody's got to grow you something. And
so you're suggesting that these people, that if, say, we decide not to eat beef anymore, these people that are beef producers, should take on a new trade.
Most of them are going to be put out of business by the mega agricultural business in any way. They have been put out. Most of them, I mean, what have we lost? About 70% of our small farms and the people because of the agribusiness. So it, I mean, they're being put out of business. It's a question of whether they're being put out of business for some reason or not, where there's a positive thing. But I agree with you. It's not a simple thing. I mean, it's very ambiguous. Somebody's going to lose jobs if you change your buying habits. It's very clear.
This has happened throughout civilization. Well, it happened throughout civilization. I mean, people stopped buying buggies. I mean, the buggies and horses. I mean, those people went out. But as we evolve towards a more efficient society, people will be employed.
Well, you know, the theory is they'll be employed, but if you're a logger or if you're in the beef industry, the first time I ever talked about this at all, and I had turned out to be a very good friend of ours who was growing beef in the group, and we loved each other eventually. But it was a real threat to the meaning structure. I mean, if you spent your life growing beef, and of course, there's a sense in which this whole environmental movement is a threat to the meaning structure of America, because America gets its meaning out of having things and out of purchasing things. And my son loves to go to these, these plazas and shop and buy. I mean, it's part of their existence now to buy. And I don't, I can't stand it. I can't go into REI. I simply can't go into it.
So what are you pointing at me?
I was pointing to Seattle. I don't know where Seattle is all that way. But when I go in there and I read those prices, $35 for a pair of gloves. And, so to have your recreation. Anyway.
Well, I agree that that's happened consistently for us throughout all time. But as we think of a better way to live, we also want to try and amend any earlier wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can somehow make it easier for these people so that they don't lose everything. I was living in Iowa during the 80s when, you know, the people were losing their farms, and they would go out and commit suicide. And
they're doing it today.
Yeah, and it's really for stable people to do that. You want to try and make it easier for these people if they are going to go out of business, and if society is going to change their ways. How do we do that?
I think we are responsible to those people.
You think we are?
Yes, definitely. As we're moving and evolving, as in this transitional generation where bloggers might be doing something different, like working for a new kind of forest service, it's tourism or something, that it is incumbent on the rest of the society to support the change, financially or whatever. And I'm willing to take a percentage of my tax money to preserve the longer-term interest rather than say, well, they're going to lose their jobs. Golly, we're going to sacrifice some of our future to keep these people's jobs today. No, we'll help them through that transition and preserve the future at the same time. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
I may be a real fatalist, okay? But I don't think there's going to be a future 50, 75 years down the road. I mean, you just need to look at the facts. You need to look at the carbon emissions and how much is there now, and you need to listen to these people. And we are just out of this window that we have been in. This earth has been in for 160,000 years. This window where the carbon dioxide emissions has always been within this level. We are out of it now. I mean, we can see it just by living in New Mexico. the weather's changing. It's changing. I mean, it's different. It's not the same as it's been. You know, it's getting rainier, it's getting hotter. It's changing all over. Look where you live. I bet you guys haven't had the same weather the last 5-10 years. It's starting to change. We are going through a global change, and it's that carbon that's out there that's doing it. And hey, I may lose my job tomorrow and be on welfare or be a bag lady, but if something doesn't really change, there's not going to be a planet, I don't think, in another 7,500 years.
There will be a planet.
There will be a planet, but it's not going to be what we know.
They say the cockroaches will endure anything.
Yeah, the cockroaches are going to be here, but my kids are it. My grandkids are it.
I don't think there's any, there's no clear, pure, unambiguous way to go from my point of view. And I just finished reading the first 80 pages of my book that I hope to get published, and it's all on what's happening. It's on the environmental revolution. And I convinced myself after reading it. It's a whole sphere of things. It's not just one thing. You know, we're losing the soil. The amount of what we can produce with our soil is going down. And it's getting less fertile. It's just getting less fertile. The water tables are going down. The guy was here, Chuck Lane, wasn't it?
Chuck Lane.
Who said that we were using water that was deposited in one aquifer 10,000 years ago. And before long, it's going to be gone. And we are just kind of oblivious to what's going on. And you ask what you can do. All you can do is do little things. And as I say, you've got to believe that God smiles when you do these little things, that somehow it's important to do them, even though you know that ultimately it's not going to solve the problem with your little action. But with a lot of actions and a lot of growth of consciousness, I think we'll shift. The question is whether we shift some of these things. And we don't know. We actually don't know what will happen when it gets warm. See, I take the position we have to act as if we did. But the clouds may actually let less heat through so that it doesn't warm up. And we don't know what kind of cloud. One kind of cloud will let it heat through, the other and add to global warming, the other and the other cloud will. So you have to kind of make up your mind and bet. It's a bet that things are going to happen as you say. And so you take some actions. But I can't be I'm not pessimistic and I'm not optimistic. I just think we have to face this reality and get some satisfaction out of moving in certain directions. Some little satisfactions and doing some things.
They're saying the reality is there will be a change, and
there'll be all kinds of change.
What it's going to be,
all kinds of change.
What the new world is going to be is kind of
you put 85 or 90 million more Mexicans in Mexico, and Southern California is going to be a different world. Anybody in California is subject to the population explosion in Mexico. And in Central America, 2.4 times the average growth of population in Central America. I mean, we are living in a world where we no longer can live alone as if we were alone, or even in our own nation. We aren't alone anymore. It's very clear. We belong to a world, and if we don't start acting and thinking about it, then we'll really all of a sudden be surprised, and we'll have the only thing I can see is we'll have a fortress. Now that acts exactly opposite to the Bush administration free trade market system, but the only way I see is to have a fortress in order to prevent some of this political, the world is going to be so upset politically. If you think we have problems in the countries around the world with their present population, double their population, triple their population. They can't take care of the people now. We got 1.2 billion people in poverty now. got 40,000 kids under five dying a day of hunger. I mean, we live in a world that somehow is saying to us, you know, come of age and become a part of the world and begin to function.
Well, what can we do about the five kids that are dying, or whatever you said it was?
Well, the first thing I did when I learned that if 10% of the Americans stopped eating meat, you'd have 12 million more tons of grain, I said, I quit. I mean, I don't know how it's going to get there, but I'm not going to eat it.
So you'd have more grain to feed the people.
Well, we'd have more grain. We wouldn't use that grain to feed the cows and pigs. I mean, most of our grain crop, 70% of our grain crop goes to feed animals. And we'd have it. Now, whether we would use it or not, but again, it's a kind of a symbolic act. I can't do it personally. And I don't know how I'm going to help organize. You know, in 86, we dumped our rice on the market, and the price of rice went from $8 a hundred weight to $4 a hundred weight. And 4 million Thai farmers lost their shirts, and we subsidized our 19,000 rice growers. Now, somehow there's something wrong. I say we should never subsidize anything that's going to be sold abroad in order to. And if we want to stop the population growth in other countries, we have to change our policies with regard to the way we affect the lives, the economic life of those countries. We've got to help them get a hold, and we've got to control our corporations in terms of what kind of policies they have, what they're serving over there. Now, this gets us into personal action politically, but I think we've got to become political. Either at the level of a mass movement, people's movement, or at the level of our parties, to insist on some leadership.
Our time is up.
More than up.
More than up.
It's time for supper.
I don't really know how to end. We've talked about a lot. We started with paper sacks, and now we're on our political parties. This always seems to be the way these discussions happen. And I pray that it doesn't end here, that the conversation doesn't end, and that we have dialogue about the concrete ways that we just vacuum one time less, that we wear our clothes for 4 days in a row instead of just one time. Whatever we do, those concrete things, or the bigger things, the giving our lives to our political parties, whatever it is, I hope that the conversation about this goes on, and I hope that Holden can be a place where that can happen, where we can learn and empower each other to go out and make the symbolic act.
And differ radically.
Differ radically?
Yeah, differ radically about our interpretations.
And differ radically about our interpretations.
So that protecting diversity?
So, thank you for coming very much.
Thanks.
Well, we'll have a section tomorrow, and what is it the session is on? Work. What you can do about the environmental revolution where you work. Sometime tomorrow.
Well, I've got to go over this again. See ya.
I do have a few papers
here. Are you protecting those natural resources?
I don't know whether you've all seen 157 things.
Have you seen this?
No, I haven't. Thank you.
157 things.
Let's see. I haven't got that.
Okay. Save a little paper. Save paper. My wife always gets on me for Xerox and all this stuff.
It's two-sided, though. That's great.
We do need one more.
One more?
Staples are recycled.
And then I have this thing on what Riverside Church is doing.
What they should do is put it here. Thank you. It seems like something they could, wouldn't take super metal if they could. make all staples out of recycled material.
Well, we, in our recycling work, we can use paperless staples.
Have you seen that? You get that?
No, I get that. And we, I work with utility companies, and we just increased our tonnage. Last year, they started an all-employee program, but it's got all-employee support. I mean, it's like the culture of the employees is we recycle personally. If they're, utility employees, generally educated, tonnage just shot up, and costs for getting rid of the paper just went way down. And now it's reused, and this is just after a year. And now we're using.